Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction? Devin Tilley here, and this is a podcast I'm so stoked to do. I think back, it was like yesterday when I was shaking in my boots, walking up to the stage and had an interview with Steve Burrows at Digital Built Week. And throughout that week, I met so many cool people and so many companies that were really just getting going with the Art of Construction tribe. And after I did this interview with Steve Burrows, Matt McMullen, who's going to be joining us as a guest co-host today, he's like, I was in the back and I met Clifton and this company's so cool. And I can't wait to talk more about that and get into TestFit, solving deals instantly with TestFit. And that tagline has had so much conversation around the last couple of years. And this company I've watched grow, so many cool stuff they got going. So what is TestFit? They help algorithms and a co-creation tool that helps developers and architects, urban planners, and more to solve site plans for hotel, parking, or multifamily buildings in seconds. TestFit is the ultimate building configurator. Matt, this has been a fun one that we've been wanting to have for a while, and we get to go in and talk with the guy, Clifton Harness, the CEO of TestFit, who got this whole thing going. And the perspective that we're bringing about this and what we want to convey to you is that what problems are you set out to solve with TestFit? And to hear it from the person who started this whole thing, I'm really excited for that. And the main thing that I really want to put out there and talk about today is that a quick feasibility study is key to begin with the end in mind. And so my overall perspective is TestFit is a special tool for viability and feasibility studies that have become a dangerous thing in our industry. So we have to look at tools like that. Matt, welcome to the stage. And pretty cool a couple years ago that we said we got to have TestFit on here. And now they've really become a player in the market. And you can talk through some case studies where you're actually using it on your architectural projects as well. Right, Matt?
Yeah, huge Clifton fan, huge TestFit fan. We've used their software for a project down in Houston, multifamily apartment down there. And then we also currently have a project going on in Aurora, Colorado for an affordable senior living project. So just the thing that I really want to talk with Clifton about is the software really provides ability for architect, developer, and others, consultants to explore multiple options quickly. And then you can come in and start to spend time developing those solutions that have promise. Really, it's a great presentation and selling tool. So excited to be on the podcast.
Awesome. Well, let's get in and hear Clifton Harness's story, the CEO of TestFit Inc. Lock and load. What's your favorite beverage?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. This one's easy. It's actually a Bloody Mary. It's an interesting drink. I will admit, not the first thing that most people would go to, but there's a really core reason. I grew up in a family that blends, and bottles spices. So the really coarse pepper, that you get in a Bloody Mary, along with the Worcestershire sauce and kind of all the stuff that goes into it. It's very savory. It reminds me of family. Reminds me of home. So that's my favorite beverage.
Reminds me of helping with a hangover. So you have a much better description of a bloody than I do. So cool stuff. What's a favorite place you've traveled?
Favorite place I've traveled, Barcelona, probably. When I was a freshman in high school, I was fortunate enough. Our family, we took a trip to the Caribbean, or not Caribbean, Mediterranean. What am I saying? The other large ocean or sea. And part of one of the stops, you know, on this trip was Barcelona. And I think my mother had to drag me kicking and screaming from La Sagrada Familia. I didn't want to leave it. It was one of the coolest things that I'd ever seen in my entire life. And honestly, it started my joy for architecture. So Barcelona, yeah, favorite place.
Super cool. Give us one story from Barcelona that you remember.
Oh boy. So you're like standing on top of the building, like our Sagrada Familia building, and it kind of shakes a little bit. And then the tour guide's like, oh, it's the subway. Don't worry about it.
Cool. Well, what's your favorite hobby or interest that we're going to talk about breaking down these silos with your cool tool you've integrated into the Art of Construction called TestFit.io? But what do you do outside of the Art of Construction when you're not solving all these feasibility study issues?
That is a hard question. So when I was working in the professional world, my hobby interest outside of work was TestFit. So we built that, you know, kind of nights and weekends, and then like for years it felt like. And then when you're getting a startup off the ground, like you don't really have anything else in your life. Like it's all consuming. And so recently, I would say, you know, my hobbies, I became a father 6 months ago. It's actually, my baby was born 6 months ago today of the time of the recording. And she's really become a core part of my life. Getting to hang out with her and play with her every day. We also own chickens. We bought chickens. They're like 12 weeks old. They're supposed to be laying eggs, like I think at 18 weeks. So we're kind of excited about that. So I'm like a hybrid agrarian sort of dad person now in my evenings.
Well, there you go. From startup to father to chickens, here we go. So let's dig a little deeper and tell us the story that led you to founding TestFit.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories here. In general, like I grew up in a real estate development family. My dad's a garden apartment guy. He's done 25,000 units in his career. So housing is very much in my DNA. But I took the approach of like, all right, well, dad does the surface park stuff, the lower density stuff. I'm going to go get an architecture degree. I'm going to go learn how to do the higher density stuff with parking garages and skyscrapers. And, you know, you're a kid, like you think really big, right? As a kid, I wasn't thinking big enough, but, the excitement of going to architecture school at UT, which is honestly the best architecture school, maybe on this side of the Mississippi. I got in and really started to fall in love with architecture. So I had this weird hybrid background of being beaten into develop, you know, think about development for 18 years. And then you go to architecture school, very different environment where you're trying to think not about financial feasibility, but the actual building itself. So I left architecture school and I decided to go work for a new urbanist real estate developer that really cared about building design and unit plan design. You know, had really, it was like a high design development shop called Streetlights Residential out of Dallas. And while there, all I did was draw site plans and draw unit plans. That was my job. You know, you can count a parking stall one time, or you can count one parking stall a bajillion times. And, you know, the thing is that when you get into it, when you're actually solving these site plans, it's really about the math. Like math is the thing that really makes development work. And there wasn't a great correlation between spatial site planning and the math. So essentially, like I would start solving the building in Excel, solving the parking solution, everything, solving it mathematically first, and then going to the plan and, you know, kind of placing everything. It was introduced a lot of friction. And again, you had to count everything. So the thing that was really frustrating was like you'd spend 3 hours drawing something, and then you've got to spend an hour counting it, making sure it's the right size. So the story, you know, got into architecture school, real estate development family. Problem I'm setting out to solve is this really slow feasibility process. Like the comparison is that pre-con could do their pricing in 2 hours. Finance could do their model in 2 hours. Architecture take eight hours or even more if you need more durations. So, you know, Excel for buildings is the name of the game. That's what we're building.
I love that explanation, right? And Matt, I want to turn this over to you to say he spent the time, you know, frustrated, but also came from that development background. But I think it's good to go get the, you know, the theory along with the practice and put that all together. Like, I'm sitting there listening to his journey that led us to this conversation today. And there's a lot of key nuggets there, huh, Matt?
Yeah, you know, and this will kind of, I think Clifton was alluding to this, tell you how sad architects' lives are, is when we realized that it would automatically lay the parking out for us, we were so excited in our office to not have to hand draw every single one of those spaces. So even just that alone caused joy and jubilation within the architectural studio.
Yeah, and Clifton, I love the name TestFit. Can you play off of that? How did TestFit become a thing? When we get to have founders come in, I always have to hear the kind of origin story.
Yeah, so our initial name was Building Forge. So the entity, the name of the company, was named Building Forge, and this is when Ryan and I created the company in 2016. And then we were like, well, the company and the product name probably should be different. So we named the product Residential Engine. And I remember in maybe the third demo, like, some guy was like, wait, what is the name of your product again? Like, how do we spell that? And I was like, residential, you don't know, like Residential Engine. Like it was a really terrible name, because it was hard to remember. And so one time it was, I don't know, we were doing a demo and one of the customer prospects goes, wow, we can do rapid test fits in here real fast. And I was like, wait, what did you say? Can you say that again? Rapid test fit. And so test fit had been sort of the thing that office people had used for the longest time to sort of lay out, desks and stuff inside an office. And it's really an indication of, it's not the final fit. It's not even the first fit. It's just a test. And that's what we're doing in this industry. Like, we're testing land all the time for its, you know, characteristics and testing the building on that land. And, you know, like the thing is, like, test fit's not an architecture tool. I know that sounds weird. It is an algorithmic allocation of space on a plan. And like, in order to turn it into architecture, you actually need to have like an architect, you know, turn it into architecture. So that, I mean, I don't know, Matt, maybe you can speak to that a little bit more about what the difference between just a box and a building is.
Yeah. So the thing I think we found about TestFit is I would call it almost like a proportionality tool. I think you did a really good job at the beginning talking about it's sort of site proportionality meets math. The thing I've really enjoyed about TestFit is, you know, obviously it's multifamily application where you can quickly come in, start to get a feel for how many units you can fit on a site and then what the quantification of those numbers are. I know that you guys have also had quite a few people who are hotel developers and architects use this as well too. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then also, what do you see as the next step, you know, without giving too much away, the next step for TestFit and its application to building types?
Sure. Next steps. Oh, man. lots to unpack here. So we started in housing. We raised our seed round in early 2020. And the goal was, the seed round was like, all right, can we go after hotels? Can we go after some of these other typologies to grow market share? And the interesting thing about going into hotels in early 2020 is that the hotel market completely disappeared in 2020. So the people using our hotel features are actually the modular guys. The volumetric modular guys love our hotel features. And they're building housing. So, you know, the invasion, if you will, into the hotel market hasn't really happened yet. Like, I think it will whenever hotels come back. But housing is maintained its foothold as this, you know, the strongest market in real estate, you know, through the pandemic. So what happened was we shifted our focus a little bit from higher density. You know, earlier I said I went to architecture school because like I wanted to do towers and giant density, big, tall buildings. And that's what we did for the first few years at TestFit. But the pandemic forced us to do lower density. Like we shipped a townhouse configurator in November. We shipped garden apartments a couple weeks ago. We're being asked for, you know, single family rentals. The whole world is sort of shifting away from new urbanism. It's quite sad, I think. But you know, I guess this is what happens when you have a pandemic.
So if I hear you right, Clifton, you're talking about this doesn't replace architecture. No. But from those who have used it, how does it make the process better? And maybe kind of talk about who does it, quote unquote, replace. And there's, when I get to have founders of tools like this, it's always this fear, right? Of this is going to take over my job and this is going to do all these things. But if I heard you right, it may replace that job when you first came out of architecture school that you weren't very passionate about. Am I understanding this right?
I was very passionate about drawing site plans. Like still to this day, like I really enjoy, you know, even manually drafting like a site plan. Like it's fun. And that's the problem with architecture is that a lot of people just treat their job as a fun, you know, it's fun. And maybe we can dive into like maybe the moral problems or you know, what happens when you automate part of a professional job. And I think the reality is that when you're getting paid to do this work, you're not being paid now in the 21st century to get the work done. You're getting paid for the work, but also for like your insight and your understanding as an architect of this site. So that's how you reduce risk for your, you know, for your clients really is by diving in and fully understanding the site plan. And you can't, in my mind, fully understand a site plan with one manually drawn iteration. Maybe if you're 50 years old and you've drawn 2000 site plans in your biological neural net that really could do the work. But a young man like me, to fully understand a site, you need to draw 10, 15 different site plans to get to a great solution. And we're moving into a world of scarcity too. Like lumber prices being what they are is a sign of scarcity of lumber. So why on earth would you try to make a more inefficient building that would take even more lumber to build the same building? And if you have an algorithm modeling tool like TestFit, you can create lots of different scenarios that would potentially reduce that cost. Actually, I think we had a customer that through TestFit, they reduced their hard cost by $900,000 in like 20 minutes. So it's an asymmetrical return, people using TestFit.
You know, I think that's some good points that you bring up, Clifton. We had a conversation with Ian Keough and Anthony Houck. They have a tool called HiPAR, which is an iterative tool for high rises and mid rises and things like that. And, you know, one of the questions we asked them was, you know, what do you say to all the architects out there who are going, oh my God, you know, I got all this education and now they're going to replace me with software. And what you say is actually true. Where architects are at their best, I think, is when sort of the utilitarian functions have been solved or identified, and then they can make that building sing, you know, really have a sense of place. And I think your software tool really does that because, as you mentioned, rather than hand-drawn this, you know, very quickly, and I'll throw out a metric, you know, something that would take maybe 3 weeks to identify multiple options, you know, with your tool, we've been able to get there in less than a week and abandon things that were going down dead ends really quickly. So having said that, we've talked a lot about architects. Who else, like in the project life cycle of a construction project, can benefit from TestFit, and how will they benefit from using your tool?
So for right now, I would say anybody in housing would really benefit from our tool. And I'm not just saying architects, I'm saying developers, I'm saying general contractors, brokers that have multifamily entitled land. These are all, you know, cities. These are all customers of ours, paying customers. And to be a startup like us and have the wealth of paying customers that we currently have, not just from, you know, they're not 100% architects. So we get this wealth of background and influence on the product. So here's why, you know, I'm on the Art of Construction podcast right now. Here is why TestFit matters to construction. Every building that is built starts with a TestFit. It's the first thing that's done. It's the feasibility study. It's the site plan. It's the very beginning of the process. And anything that happens during construction or anything that happens during lease up or anything that happens during the design process, feedback or pieces of information, like for example, when you go from, you know, 3-level building to a 4-level building, there's a lot of changes that happen in fire and, you know, vertical circulation. So having all of this sort of feedback from the process, from the construction process, what works well, what doesn't work well in the shapes of the building, we need a lay down area, having all of that feedback come right to the beginning of the process, the test fit, is actually quite helpful because it narrows the range of outcomes for what a building can do very quickly. Now, the limitation is that at some point the machine will start to become more insightful, I think, than the human, and the machine might introduce some ideas that the human didn't have before. And that's the wild thing about working in, you know, algorithmic modeling, is that there's emergent solutions. And I mean, people say that's the promise of generative design, right? Is that you're going to get these better solutions. But in my mind, just getting the information from downstream into the existing project is like more innovation than most projects get today.
I love the comment when you say narrow the range of outcomes. And that really makes me think about when you say, when you see it moving and shaking and doing all these stuff, you think like, oh my gosh, this is like endless possibilities. But it's actually doing the opposite of narrowing the range of feasible outcomes. And I think that's the part of taking that information and bringing that back to some kind of generative design that actually goes back to one of the things that's been so fun having Matt as the executive producer on The Art of Construction. He's always going back to the pro forma and the numbers and how this actually works of turning these video games into real handshakes. So you think back to the core of what, and Clifton, I appreciate you saying this is why I want to be on The Art of Construction and why I started The Art of Construction is for contractors and its affiliates. And we settled on the word affiliates because it boils down to all these decision makers around the GC trying to execute this whole thing, right? And this is a critical thing for the contractor to understand how a test fit works. And that's why going back to why I wanted you to talk about the name of this tool and to say, this is contractor, huge for the contractors to be able to keep all this stuff in check. And that's what I hear when you're talking about these different feasibility studies and what this does and taking all these boxes that then you can really let the artist go to work, right? The of construction, this is the of the artist giving them these amount of boxes to say, here is the best feasibility study, which is what we're all trying to do on this. Am I understanding this right? Kind of from the lens of our contractors who I'm so passionate for to move this thing forward.
Yeah, there's actually five core things you need to do for project feasibility. TestFit does design. Like that's only one thing. Does design really well. So the five things are finance, construction, site, design, and compliance. And if you don't have feasibility done on all five of these things, you're not going to have a great project, or you're not even going to have something you can send to a bank or to an investor. So that is to say, like financial pro forma, that is 20% of what you need for a feasibility study. Construction pricing, the free con, the stuff that I'm assuming, you know, most of the construction guys with their interest in TestFit are going to be in pre-con. That's another 20%. Like you have to have the pre-con, the hard cost. You have to understand how much this thing is going to cost. Site has to do with the land. You know, what is the shape of this land? Is it got horrible topo on it? Is it going to be really hard to build on? Design being the building. Like I've spent 5 years on 13 configurators that do mainly housing. And it's amazing that we've had to build 13 configurators to do all of the different densities of housing in the U.S. And the last one's compliance. In the United States, we still do have zoning compliance, and it varies from city to city and state to state with how restrictive it is. 3,000 counties, 8,000 municipalities. That means there's 11,000 different, you know, things that can influence your compliance. And you very much need an architect, civil engineer, someone on the ground that understands that. So that's never going to, in my mind, that's never going to go away. The complexity of compliance in the United States is not going to go away. So five things: finance, construction, site design, compliance. And I think we at TestFit have taken that process, which used to take 4 weeks. We've gotten it down, hopefully, with our customers, about a week. So you're saving 3 weeks per deal, you know, if you use TestFit. Well, if you adopt TestFit, there's a difference between using it and adopting it.
And I would say, you know, Clifton, you know, you talked a little bit about your background earlier. It's pretty apparent in the tool. So in, you know, I'll talk a little bit about our project in Aurora. We've what TestFit has given us is kind of a visual connection between all these different stakeholders at the table, where we have, you know, Arctic Construction is the architect. We've got a developer on board. We've got a parish in Aurora. So you have a priest who doesn't really, you know, necessarily understand business.
Is he the landowner? He controls the site?
Actually, it's the Archdiocese of Denver. So we have the Archdiocese sitting at the table with this. Then we have the parish's business manager. And then we have the real estate broker who is representing the Archdiocese as the seller's or leasing broker, because we're going to do a long-term land lease. And what's been beautiful about TestFit is that we've come up with a very elegant form that we've then started to turn into architecture, but everybody's able to look at it, ask questions about it, and have real discussions. And now our next step is to take that to the municipality, City of Aurora, with their planning department, and have some good discussions with them. And then we'll bring in a GC or the developer CM partner. Start to put numbers to it. So as you said, it allows you to realize, do you have a real project, or are we all wasting our time here at the table very quickly?
Right. Yeah. And for some development guys that have been doing housing for 20 years, like my dad, he can look at a site and he knows whether or not it'll work. But his limitation is that he's now got to get a site plan to send it to a bank or to an investor. So like, that's what he needs out of it, right? I need to send this site to a bank. So everybody's got a different perspective on it, and everybody's kind of using it for different reasons. And that's incredibly good to see from our ecosystem, lots of different people using it in different ways.
One of the other things, and let me ask you about this, of maybe what you have planned in the future, is it allowed us to really get very quickly to a volumetric scale and massing that started to expose architectural opportunities. Because as you know, in multifamily, it's all about the amenities now, right? And so we were able to very quickly identify with TestFit that we could have like a pretty cool rooftop deck that had killer views of the mountains. And we also started to realize in sort of it's not truly a donut or a wrap, but kind of a modified wrap, where we started to create various courtyards that could house amenities. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some future functionality with TestFit that would allow you to quantify those things?
Well, so right now, everything's tabulated automatically. So like amenity areas are tabulated. Everything's quantified in the product. Now, moving forward, our goal is to de-risk our company from housing, if that makes sense. Because like, I'm going to say 98% of our revenue is from housing, right? Like that's where we are absolutely lethal. So part of that is creating a simple modeling tool. So we're going to release something that just helps our customers just make simple massings. Like you can't actually draw a rectangle in TestFit right now. I don't know if you knew that, Matt. Like it takes quite a bit of struggle to just draw a rectangle. So we're going to try to release that sometime this summer. But then later in the year, we're back to configurators building, you know, probably a light industrial feature and a retail feature. So those are the two that we're really focused on, or actually the three: volumes, retail, and light industrial. As far as like non-housing configurator effort in the future. But we absolutely want to continue to penetrate and maintain our dominance in the housing part of the industry. So at least in the US, I can tell you that we are dominating the US market.
And I think it's because you guys have made this simple killer tool that works. And that's what I don't use the tools. And that's where I have the honor of asking these questions from the 100,000 foot view, but I get to go to all these different podcasts and all these different platforms. And then Matt is bringing them into the team. And I think back of like show 163 titled "The Digital Pencil to Maximize Real Estate in Urban Places." And that's when we got to interview Paul Waddell of Urban Sim and Penciler and these different tools. Yeah. That what's been really fun is that connection is back to these platform and processes like Digital Built Week, where Benjamin Glunz, where we interviewed him and had all these different tools. How do they all fit into the art of construction, right? And it starts kind of with test fit, right? And that's what I'm hearing, Matt. That's how you're building up. Like when you get into Enscape and others, you don't start with Enscape because that can get you in trouble. Am I understanding this right, Matt?
Yeah, you know, yeah.
We made the building too sexy from the beginning.
Yeah, it's one of those, I don't want to like step on Moritz's toes, but that's more sort of like the frosting on the cake, you know. And so we've got to have a good edible cake. But, you know, and I shared this with Clifton in the pre-interview, you know, our partners, you know, Pangolf Tech, who we did the AOC podcast with, are our outsourcing drafts people and Revit craftsmen. And so we have one gentleman, PK Grish, who is working on the Queen of Peace project in Aurora, Colorado. And he had been working on multifamily in Belgium and in San Diego, California. And when we presented TestFit to him and I said, you know, hey, just dive in and learn how this thing works. You're going to love it. He said, oh my God, I wish I would have had this thing when we were doing all of our European projects. So it's one of those things where they're very excited, you know, in India about TestFit as well too. So you're starting to spread internationally.
That's actually kind of incredible in my mind that like a firm in India has got like deals in Belgium and they're all over the world. It's like, it's really interesting when I meet with people in other countries, because like their perception of housing and what housing should do is like very different than in the US. And I definitely rub some Europeans the wrong way, I think, with the way that I talk about housing, because in the US it very much is like commoditized. It's very much you're not winning design awards, I think, on housing in the US. Like it's not some, like maybe in New York you would, but New York City, but I mean, garden apartments, like the 40% of housing in the US, no garden apartment deal is going to win a design award. And that's the kind of buildings that I want to be deeply invested into. Like this is the majority of people in their life is how they use the built environment is not in buildings that you would design in architecture school. Like these are buildings that are just commodity buildings. And I feel like I could spend the rest of my life innovating in commodity buildings and hopefully make a practical dent making them better buildings.
And there lies why I was so excited to have you on the podcast. When we talk about building better buildings, it's not about building unicorns. It's about building better buildings that actually move the art of construction forward. And Matt, I think about this when we were driving to family built homes and we really said, let's really go visionary on this drive and talk through what in 5 years we want to have from now. And it was really back of that foundational element of having the right home for people, right? And then being able to put the right amount of elements around that. And it's really fun for me to sit and listen to you guys talk about how Clifton, from when I met you at Digital Build Week and we're walking in of this Art of Construction podcast and everybody's talking about this new test fit and this new Enscape. Now we're sitting here talking about these real projects, Matt, that are actually coming to life to build better buildings. It's just really cool. I just want to take a moment and pause and reflect on that, Matt.
Yeah, no, I think that's the key is I think we all get enamored with like Digital Built Week and all these listening to podcasts and webinars and all these sorts of things, but it's really about rubber meeting the road. And, you know, with Clifton's product and software with TestFit, I mean, it really has true application where you can go in and so I'll agree with you, Clifton, on the commoditization of it, but I think you don't give yourself enough credit. I think what's great about your tool is it allows us to get in, get a solution where the numbers work so that you've got the developer's attention. But then the architect, if you're a good architect and you're really committed to creating place and dignity for people living there, then I think then you can come over the top of what's been created in TestFit and really start to create a meaningful place that people want to live in, not because totally the rent's agree. Good or whatever, right?
Yeah. Specking to secure the vision. It starts with the foundation of these boxes can be executable. And now you're giving the rules of the game to the architect to put the art on the construction.
I'm not a great word communicator. I really like GIFs and images and stuff because it gets what's in my head out, you know, quite a bit faster. But the thing in my mind is that like going to a developer and being armed with one site plan that you're really passionate about as an architect is maybe like a 1x. But if you go to a developer with 14 site plans and the one that you think's a winner, like you can basically control the outcome of that meeting because you've done your homework. It's when development guys get like half baked ideas or honestly over baked ideas, like way too much design effort put in too early. That's when they kind of get turned off from the building design process.
Totally.
And we did this webinar earlier this year. We called it real-time deal prototyping. And it's like where you get everybody in the same room, like a charrette basically. Mm-hmm. But you talk about deals and there's a very big difference between projects and deals. Like you're going to do, you know, 20 times as many deals as you're going to do projects. And 19 out of 20 are going to get killed. Like they're just, you do a lot in the hopes of winning work in AEC. So that in my mind is like the low hanging fruit is like, how do we get more time to focus on innovation? Well, let's eliminate all of this time that nobody's getting paid for. And, you know, hopefully we can recoup some of this, you know, innovation debt back into the main project. And that's hopefully, you know, a trend that we can help be a part of. The thing that worries me though, is that people are actually just going to start doing way more site planning because the friction, like there's basically zero friction in doing a site plan now. So I think instead of 20, you might end up with 40, you got to do 40 site plans. But I think that's true, you know, kind of in anything. Like now we're doing more construction documents than we ever have just because we have the ability to do it, right?
So much validity to that. And that's what, when we talk about connecting the construction materials and technology to the right handshakes, that's what we're talking about, the art of the deal. Like how do we continue on this global megaphone talk through to fast track the art of the deal? And that's where Clifton, it's fun listening. You know, you're talking about your tool and Matt, because Matt can draw something, look at it, and it's like, wow, like he's seeing so much more than us students are seeing because he's done a lot more of that. When you talked about your dad, And I have the pleasure of a lot of us that have quote unquote grown up, and Matt and I are lifelong learners. And he's like a kid in a candy store. It's not an age thing. It's just an experience thing. Right. And experiencing things a different way. Like I have to be like, Matt's going to always hand draw it, 'cause that's how it works. But how do we get that tool into the art of the deal and pulling this? And that's where Matt, you've been being able to take the people that can craft these different moving parts to say, I feel good about this. Let's move forward. I would equate
Matt to basically what it's kind of a joke, but biological neural net, like a guy that has done enough iterations that if you give him a thing, like he's going to do what his biological neural net is going to do, you know, just because you have the experience. And young people, I think it takes a lot of effort, a lot more effort than we're comfortable with to get there. Like I'm saying 20 years of effort. Like you're not going to convince a millennial to sit tight and draw site plans for 20 years. Like it's not going to happen. And Gen Z is probably even worse. You probably get them to sit for 10 minutes, before they're bored and time to move on. So that is to say, like, the future of our profession is, at least at the software side, gamification. Like how do you, get more people interested in solving the problem synchronously as opposed to asynchronously. So like right now, like I'll send pricing to my pre-con guy and I'll wait a little while and I'll get back. What I'm saying is like, what if we could sync all of that? Everybody meets all at the same time, solves the problem. And then you go, you know, then you're done. Like it actually makes people really uncomfortable when we do these real-time deal prototyping, sessions, because they're forced to make decisions in real time. Whereas we always love to hide behind our email and, we'll have a meeting about that later. Like that's the frustrating thing, I think, in AEC is like, you can solve these problems today, but are you really willing to?
Man, we just threw a lot out there, with you on the pedestal of us kids in the candy store trying to figure out Scotty, my marketing director, calls me the digital immigrant, and he's the digital native, and challenging us all to how do we move this thing forward. With Matt, you're the one leading when you talk about these projects, you're the one getting to say, yeah, let's move forward. What's your take on that?
Yes. So when you guys were talking, I didn't buy any of it because you guys were being too nice about me, but no, it's one of those things where what happens with me is that I create these designs in my mind. And so I'm so thankful that there's people like Clifton and Moritz and folks like that can allow me to get it out of my mind and get it into physical manifestation. And so like, I love digital natives because you guys are bringing in all these cool softwares that allow real-time decision-making and real-time amplification of ideas that only existed in the mind.
And so the key thing of both sides have to understand how we work together instead of pointing the finger at each other of like, that's how this thing works. It's an iterative process, but you got to start with a feasibility study.
So that's my take
on
it. I thank God that Clifton is around and doing what he's doing.
And I thank God that I have a co-founder that can actually create what's in my head.
There you go. And then in lies the movement of the art of construction, right? I started to say, God, there's got to be a better way to do this. And then I meet key people like Matt. We go to key events like Digital Built Week, and we get to meet all these really cool people in these platforms that it all just starts rowing in the same direction. And that's what this whole platform is for. So Clifton, as we get to wind this thing down, the connection, I've been asking this question to everybody since the beginning. If we're in the mid 200s podcast, that a lot of them don't get this far as we continue to crack through the ceiling. But as we continue to move through this thing, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Yeah, it's got to be all about how you augment humans. It's not, in my mind, how you create more robots to do things. Like, I think the lowest hanging fruit for the next 5 years is augmenting humans. Like, if we really want to pick up productivity in construction, there's a couple of things that we need to do. We need to become data centric, like religiously data centric. What I mean by that is having a much better understanding of all of the things that go into a building and also all the things that, kind of come out of the building. Like there's so much waste on job sites, you know, because we're not being effective with our materials. And when lumber is the price that it is right now, is it really acceptable to lose 40% or something, some insane amount of waste? So I would say, like, things that affect humans, like, can be an asymmetrical return for a human, like having an iPad on site. Like, that was a huge asymmetrical return. You now know how you didn't have to go to the plan stack to go see, you know, what you should do on this specific wall. But the whole future is more going to be geared towards data-driven design and taking information from the job site right to the beginning of the process. Now, I think that realistically, it's going to take like 10 years. It's going to take a long time. You're going to need a lot more Clifton harnesses in this world. Cause like, you know, Ian, like everybody that's on your podcast, we need all of these people rowing in the right direction. Right. And I think ostensibly we are, which is good. But it's where, like, it's when things like Katerra happen and we're never going to get the, I don't think we're ever going to really get the full story because there's a lot of politics involved and we're not going to get to learn, you know, from the failures of it. But the Katerra employees that are coming out, like, they have this experience, right? And they'll be able to shape the future of the built environment. So having failures, like, we need a lot more failure. This is going to sound weird. We need a lot more large failures in construction. Like, we just do. We need people to fail.
Yeah, and we're having a whole podcast series around that, around the blue collar warriors of, we call it the Forge story at the end of every podcast, where you get to come tell your story and we get to highlight that, but you also have to talk through about a problem that you overcame. And like, that's where we have to do it, but we have to do it in all levels of this thing, right? To figure this out. And glass half full, it's like Katerra changed the game. Like, modular is a different, they shed a whole different light by the $2 billion that went in those. And I totally agree with you, Clifton, as far as, we would all like to learn a little bit more, but that's back to that intellectual property thing. That is a thing that we're trying to break down those silos here on the Art of Construction.
So I'm just going to probably, we're near the end of it, but I just want to give a scale to how big the problem, like our housing problem, is in this country. I did this math the other day. There's a report that said, you know, we need, what was it, 586,000 units per year for the next 10 years, in order to meet, you know, our housing demand. It's like 6 million units. And you know, the math on that is it's about $100 billion per year, in construction to build all those apartments. And Katerra was 2 billion. So we need 50 Katerras worth of construction every year to match housing, demand in our country. And I frankly, I just don't think we're failing enough. And I think everybody's afraid of failure. And granted, $2 billion is a huge fail. Maybe we need more, in order to solve a $1 trillion industry problem, which is construction.
Interesting perspectives. Well, what's that, to close this thing out, Clifton, what is that one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business outside of course, make TestFit a critical part of your feasibility studies, right?
Yeah, I always encourage contractors to weigh in on the design process. The way that contracts are written, like, we are not getting the feedback from construction in the architecture industry that we need to make better buildings. I think there's startups out there, maybe companies working on this process, but getting construction guys to weigh in on design is actually incredibly important. And what I mean by this is, like, the way that you lay out your courtyards could drastically change because you need to put a crane in the very specific spot. And that's not something that architects are really thinking through right at the very beginning of the process, but it is something that can basically drastically change, you know, the whole design of your building. So I would say give feedback to architects. And if your architects are unwilling to listen to you, email clifton@testfit.io with what you, the feedback that you'd like to give your architect they're not listening to, because we'll listen.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story, Clifton.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Matt, it's a common thing. Every time we get one of these awesome startups that have become leaders of the Art of Construction tribe, it boils down to managing those two things we don't have enough of. And first it's time, and then it's money. And we can look at this as a glass half full thing to say, man, the tools are there now. Now we just got to figure out how to make them a critical part of the Art of Construction tribe. And it's so cool to be able to, you know, I think about how I was years ago meeting Clifton and the brand new test fit just came out there and we're like, we got to check this thing out, to now being, you know, if you're not paying attention to tools like test fit, you're going to be left in the dirt. Wouldn't you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, I would. And yeah, I would say we've talked a lot about test fit, you know, Clifton's creation. But I want to like focus a little bit on Clifton, the person, you know, the new father is there has to be, I mean, there has to be more digital natives, you know, like Clifton that step up and really start to fill the space with the tools that we need. And the beauty of it is, I think if you're a digital native, as Scott Hicken talks about, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, listen to how his journey happened, right? There was influence from his father, experience of having lived in multifamily, and then an absolute passion for architecture and that, and bringing it together. That is a winning recipe for creating a great startup company, becoming an influential entrepreneur.
So well said. Yeah, we're huge fans of TestFit and all the other different tools that we've been putting together in the Art of Construction customer care wheel, and it's all with you in the center, contractors. Matt, thank you so much for coming in and joining me and talking through some of this stuff that I'm struggling to understand, but we're all picking up and we're all in this movement together to say, at the end of the day, how do we build better buildings? Because we need a lot more of them, right, Matt?
Yeah, thanks, Devin, for having me on.
All right, crush it out there, tribe.